Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Eric, and that is Braden, one of the newest members of the LSAT Demon team. Braden, welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. Why don't you quickly introduce yourself to the listener? Let us know a little bit about your background and what it is that you're doing now with LSAT Demon.
Yeah. My name is Braden, as you said. I've been working on my LSAT for 2.5 years now. My journey came to an end in January, and a very exciting one. Now I'm doing quality assurance work for the LSAT Demon, making sure the website is up and running and perfect as our production team has made it.
Fantastic. So you mentioned 2.5 years of working on the LSAT. Thankfully, a happy end here in January. Congratulations. Why don't you just give us the quick overview of that journey, kind of where you started, if there's a diagnostic that you can remember.
Yeah. So I don't know if quick is a good description, because 2.5 years was long. Sure. There were some days where it didn't seem like there was an end in sight, or that it might not ever end. At the end, I was contemplating, all right, maybe I wait, you know, another few years and wait for my last two to open. I took all five, but my diagnostic started with a 142 in August of 2021. From there, I was told by a family friend that, oh, no, you don't study for the LSAT. It's kind of like either you have it or you don't, and you should just go take it. So I signed up for two back to back, and I took the first one and bombed it, you know, scored, I think, like a 149 or 150, and then took another the next month and scored a 149 or 150 again. I then was, I was working wildland fires at the time, and I went out into the woods, and the only thing to do out there is kind of listen to podcasts and hang out. And so, all right, well, maybe there's an LSAT podcast. So I just looked up LSAT in the Apple Podcast app, and first one that popped up was the Demon. I started listening, and it almost, you know, kind of got me a little upset. I was like, oh, I just wasted two of these attempts. You know, I really started buying into what Ben and Nate had to say, and, you know, started listening pretty religiously, and came back, got a free account on the Demon.
Sorry to interrupt, but I also just love the idea of you out there in the wilderness, like it's a Rocky montage or something. Some 80s rock music is playing and you're sharpening your mind. I love it.
It was a fun time. I was in Montana at that time. And okay. After that time, I bought an LSAT book, a training book per se. And I started reading it and found myself even more confused, and, you know, ended up getting back into civilization after that, and getting Wi-Fi and having a free Demon account, just started drilling. And I think, like many people, especially with the advice that, oh, you can't study for it, I ended up taking section after section, you know, practice test after practice test, just kind of pulling this lever, almost the slot machine, hoping for a miracle as I was studying. And as I got deeper and deeper into the Demon podcast and understanding what I should really make my studying look like, you know, I started to slowly change. Okay, I'm going to drill. And it's not easy, because I think we all really want that immediate satisfaction of, I want to see my score. You know, we really don't care about the 100% that you get on one question. We care about the, oh, but how did I do on this test? What does the numbers say that I can, you know, tell everybody about? And it's,
yeah, it's not as sexy at the end of a day's study to go to your friends and be like, hey, I got one LSAT question right. But that is absolutely the work that you need to be doing.
Yeah, it's almost hard to make yourself do it. You have to force yourself to tell, you know, have the self-control and the discipline to say, no, I'm not going to, you know, have that immediate satisfaction. I'm going to sit down and do the work and do one question and dig in, which was the other thing that really took a while too, was, I think, again, going back to pulling that slot lever, it's like, do a question, miss it. Oh, okay. Next one, you know, I'll get it. I'll get the next one. And, you know, slowly over time, understanding that that I needed to dig into the answers, whether they were right, great, why is the right one right? Why are the wrong ones wrong? And then if I got it wrong, doubly, why is that one wrong? And where did I go wrong? And so slowly but surely over the course of about a year and a half-ish, I was progressing into the 160s and really was trying to force a cycle that was never going to happen. And I took another LSAT, an official. I felt like I was in the 160s, high 150s, low 160s. And I went in with the mindset of, all right, I'm going to hit a grand slam on this one. Like, this is going to be it. I'm going to score 10 points above my highest PT ever. And the unfortunate thing, and the thing that I think I wish somebody would have told me, and I think I heard it on the podcast later, but you don't hit grand slams on the LSAT, not on the official one, unless you're PTing, taking practice tests that are just in that range. Don't expect 10 miracle points to just come out of thin air. Don't try to force it in a month because it does take time. As my 2.5 years exemplify, it took a very long time. And so I ended up scoring the exact same score. I had some technical issues and some proctor issues that really threw me for a loop on that one. And, was again trying to force the issue, trying to force the cycle, and ended up just keeping the score. I was like, you know what, maybe I did good. You never know how you really did leaving an LSAT. The only way you know how you did is by what your practice tests tell you before. Mine told me that I was not ready. And so, at that point, I'd taken three of my shots and missed wide right on all three. And so I really realized the dire situation I was in and what it needed to look like for me to go ahead and sign up for that next one. And I took that to heart. I had family around me telling me, you've been studying for, a year and a half, 2 years now, 6 months ago, 2 years, it's time. Like, you're ready. Like, when are you going to take the next one? When are you going to take the next one? It's like, when I'm ready. Like, when the practice tests tell me I'm ready, I will take another. And that was a hard barrier to overcome, especially with, my parents, very, very supportive and wouldn't ever not want to help me in anything that I'm doing. But they want to know, like, hey, when are you taking the next one? You've been studying for a while. When's the next one? And my answer was always, when the practice tests tell me. And so finally, in would have been October, the few months before that, I was feeling ready, so I signed up. I printed out my registration form. I slapped it on the wall for some motivation to really dig in. And then at that point, I took October. I scored a 168 in October. And that was my fourth attempt. And there was a lot of pressure on me during that attempt. I kind of ritualized my practice test ceremony. I'd take it same place every single Saturday or every other Saturday, depending on the week and what I had going on, kind of the weeks leading up to it. And, would eat the same thing, would drink the same thing, kind of really ritualized it and maybe got a little too superstitious in my practices. And again, had some proctor issues. The hinges on my laptop are not super tight, and so when I went to go show them the bottom of my desk, my computer slammed shut and kicked me out of the proctor
Oh no.
program. And it took about an hour to reboot, which maybe helped me, maybe hurt me, in the sense that I had about an hour to sit there and kind of calmly figure things out and breathe. And and so that 168 came back, and I was happy. That's a score that I can apply with. That's a score that I'm proud of, but I wasn't satisfied. My highest PT was in the high 170s, and I was regularly PTing in the mid 170s. And so a 168 was that plus or minus five that you can realistically expect on test day. And so I had to wait. I had to wait to renew my fee waiver. So I missed the November sign up. I renewed my fee waiver the very same day that I could. I signed up for January and really dug in January. That last month was hard. I think mentally it was taxing. I was ready to be done, but knew that I couldn't just quit. I was on the end zone. I was in the 5 yard line. I had to kind of push through and get through that last month or so, and I walked away with a 172. So opened up that score and about fell to my knees. I was very excited and very grateful for everyone who's helped me along this journey. It's been a long one.
Fantastic. 142 to a 172, if I remember correctly. So a 30-point score increase. All that after someone told you this isn't something you improve at. Just take the test. You don't actually get better at the LSAT. Also, just, I mean, big props for you. I think how many people would get to that 168 and think, oh man, I've already improved by 24 points? Many people would kill for, sorry, 26 points. Many people would kill for a 168. I've been at this for over 2 years, so let me just call it there. But you knew you had better.
Yeah, I mean, I had my PTs really showing me what I could do, and I think the thing going into that fifth and final test was, I know no matter what, I walk away with a great score, and it's just another reason why you should take all five. It's not like the fifth score, if it was a 120, yeah, it shows up, but it's not what's reported. And so, there was almost no pressure on that fifth one. I was putting pressure on myself because I wanted that one. I told myself 1 7 something. I don't care what it is. It could be 171, 170, 179. Fine with me. So,
Did you change your routine at all going into that fifth test? You mentioned having like a real set kind of game day routine, which I think is very common. But that it kind of when you got thrown out of that routine on your fourth attempt, it sort of frazzled you a little bit. Did you ease up on that for attempt number five?
yeah, that was I think a big part of my success in attempt number five, as well as that, knowing not everything is going to go your way. Ben had recently talked about on the podcast that, visualize what can go wrong, because 99% of the time it's not going to go wrong. And if you visualize it, you're going to put yourself in a great position to understand how to react to it. So I did that. And then I also went in with the understanding and changed my studying practices to know that I'm good at the LSAT, whether it's 8 a.m. when I want to take my test and when I think I'm going to be the best prepared, or it's midnight and I'm up studying and sitting there. Whether I'm in the room that I'm going to take the LSAT in, or I'm in my lunch break room at work, like, I am good at the LSAT and I have to know that. And it's kind of that LSAT swagger that Nate talks about. It's like, and losing that ritual really, I think, put that into perspective and helped me realize, okay, I don't need everything to go perfect.
You mentioned discussions that you had with your family throughout this process, and I know that that's something that many of our listeners will sympathize with, will have felt the pressure from family, from friends, from people in their lives who just don't understand why they're taking so long. How was that? You mentioned you had supportive parents, but how was it navigating that? Was that repeated conversations where you had to kind of explain the process to people? Was it just like kind of shutting them out and saying, hey, they just don't know. I need to do what's best for me. How did you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, it took multiple times of explaining what everything meant and how the schools work and what they look at, and that they only take your best score, and that there's these things called a 509 report. And I started sending my parents the 509 reports and highlighting the 25th and 75th percentile and saying, hey, these are the numbers that I need to be above if I want a chance. And if I want a great chance, I need to be above the 75th. And bringing them into the process, it didn't yield the questions that they had, or, you know, stop them from asking when I'm taking my next one. But it helped put into perspective why I was really doing this. And, you know, the potential that a great LSAT score has for scholarships and what it means to potentially walk away debt-free from law school. I do think one of the biggest things that helped me in talking with my parents a lot was explaining that I'd taken three of my shots. And, you know, I kind of explained, I was like, hey, look, I'm on the ice rink right now. Somebody for the last three shots put a blindfold on me, spun me around, and made me shoot upside down. And I missed completely. Like, I've got to get the blindfold off. I have to get up and I have to figure this out to take my last two, because if I miss, law school might not be in my future. So I got to do everything I can to hit the net. And, you know, putting it into an analogy, I think helped a little bit and helped him realize. And I think I said it more than once, but, you know, coming up with something that makes it understandable and relatable to your parents, and know at the end of the day that, you know, if they are your parents, you have, you know, you should respect them and their decisions. And if you're the one paying at the end of the day, you know, you can qualify how much they get a say.
Very good point. Yeah. If they're paying for you, then okay, maybe you got to listen, but if you're going to be footing the bill, then you're the one who has to decide. But no, I think the way you describe that, it sounds like you come from a hockey family though. So I guess it's whatever analogy helps to get the point across. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think again that, you know, it's easy to go take the test. It's easy to give in to the peer pressure. And it's really easy to also compare yourself to those around you. You know, if you're in pre-law, you know, you're an undergrad still. A lot of my tests took place outside of college. I was done. And so I didn't have too many people around me that were taking the test, but I did have some people around me that had quick success that, you know, studied for a few weeks, took the test and scored in the high 170s, you know, or took a diagnostic and scored super high. And so it was hard to kind of watch those people pass by as I was still on my journey. But a quote I love is, comparison is the thief of joy. And you kind of have to stay true to yourself and know that the work you're putting in is going to pay off in the long run. And that's not to say that it doesn't affect you. You know, when that kind of instance happened to me, my scores dramatically dropped for a few weeks. I was in my head, every PT I took, I was comparing myself before I even clicked submit on a single question. I was thinking about, you know, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that, and trying to force these scores. And so, you know, to those people that are out there that had friends or family or, you know, anybody that kind of took off and got good at the LSAT quick and you're still on your journey, hold tough. It's not easy. It's not fun, but it will pay off. And you just got to keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah. No, that's very well said. And you're completely right about comparison being the thief of joy. I think it's related to what you were talking about earlier with getting worked up over your LSAT scores and how that is a distraction from the work that you really need to do. You know, just pulling the slot lever to see what your latest PT cranks out versus doing one question at a time and getting it right and thoroughly reviewing. And in both cases, whether it's comparing yourself to other people or comparing your PT score to what you think it should be, for me, I think a lot of the answer comes down to just finding the smaller victories and embracing the smaller victories, which come not from comparison to others or from whatever a full PT says, but just something as simple as, oh man, I nailed that necessary assumption question. I totally got it. Like, I predicted that perfectly and I found the answer just like that. And that was like a new light bulb moment for me. That's a victory. That's something to get excited about. The other stuff will come, but you kind of have to lean into the smaller stuff and find joy in those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, celebrating the small victories is huge. And to go along with that, I think you have to give yourself grace and meet yourself where you're at. Not every day are you going to be able to give yourself an hour to sit down and do LSAT work. It might be Sunday at, noon, and you have all day and you've done all the things you need to do for the weekend, and there's nothing but you and the LSAT on the couch, but you're just not mentally there, and you got to recognize, hey, that's okay. I'm going to give myself the day. I'm going to give myself the grace. I'm going to meet myself where I'm at. Instead of an hour, maybe I do one question. Wrong or right, I'm going to dig in. I'm going to do one question. I'm going to close my laptop, and I'm going to go walk the dog, or I'm going to go watch Netflix because I've been working hard. And if it's not an hour a day every day, that's okay. It will come.
Speaking of working hard, so you're with the demon now as a QA tester, right? You have also done work with the Ask Button, right? As part of the Ask Button Heroes program. You want to talk about that?
Ask Button was amazing for my learning and understanding. There is nothing more challenging than trying to get into the head of somebody over text, right? You're not even hearing their voice, but you're reading what they wrote. So you're trying to get into their mindset of how they did not understand something and then making it relatable to them to try and explain it. So not only do you have to have a great understanding of what you're about to talk about, but you almost have to have this situational awareness of the person that you're responding to. And I did the Ask Button for a few months, and then test time for October was coming up, and so I did take a step back, but those few months were pivotal. I feel like I truly dug into the things that were the intricacies of the LSAT. It wasn't, just okay, this is confusing, sufficient for necessary. It's okay, what makes this confusing, sufficient for necessary? What are the triggers? What are the things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily pick up by just reading, the explanation or watching the video or digging in on your own? And how do you explain that back to somebody? And that was another thing that really helped me as well, was getting good study buddies. And finding people to teach to each other. You can be at the same level, and you can be at different levels, but if you treat each question, like you're explaining it to that person, like you're teaching them, it makes a world of difference. And, is another great area to meet people and talk to people about the LSAT and, find some relatable qualities in people that, it is a lonely journey after college when you're doing the LSAT on your own. There's not many people in your town, maybe, or around you that are on that same journey. So it's cool to talk to people and also know that not every study buddy is going to be a great study buddy. Some of them are going to be perfect and push you to be better. I had one study buddy who I still meet up with even after finishing the LSAT. Me and him worked together.
Nice.
He helped me get to where I needed to go, so I'm helping him. And we met every single day, Monday through Friday, for 6 months straight.
Wow.
Every now and again we'd meet, not meet up on a day, but consistent every single day, every single time. And also, understanding that life happens, and things happen. Sometimes you cancel, but there's other study buddies out there that, maybe aren't taken as seriously as you, or have other priorities, have new jobs, have, kids or something else in their life that they're not able to kind of be the best fit for you. And so, I mean, just finding a good study buddy. And my study buddy that I met with, I had multiple. Me and my study buddy that I'd meet with every day, we would do LR and RC. We'd pick a topic for the day and we'd run with it. Other study buddies I had, we only did logic games. And then I had other study buddies that we would do everything. And so finding people that match what you need and knowing that it's okay sometimes to be like, hey, this isn't, I need to study on my own, or
Yeah, of course.
I don't think we work well together. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice. Braden, this whole episode has been a gold mine. I feel like your story is super inspirational, and a lot of our listeners are going to connect to it. Maybe we can wrap up with just any final advice that you have for current students.
The first one, is work hard. I think it's, I didn't write it down, but I think it's Thinking LSAT episode 381, and it has the mouse in cream metaphor, where
Okay, yeah.
the mouse is churning the butter, the cream into butter in a cup, and then climbs out, falls into a bucket, and then falls into the bucket. Churns and then falls into like a pool or an ocean. And that I think truly is a testament to the LSAT, to law school, to legal practice. It doesn't stop. And to kind of tie into that, go work in a law office. I currently work for the public defender in my county, and finding a legal office to see what it's like every day. When I started this journey, I wanted to do contracts. I wanted to do artist management contracts. I met with a few attorneys that did that. I saw their lifestyle. I saw how repetitive the work was and how their job was to find the missing comma. And, while that is still sometimes true in a criminal defense office, it's not what you do every single day. I moved to a new city pretty early on into my LSAT journey. And I started calling people, just cold calling. Hey, I'd love to talk to you. I'm thinking about going to law school. Most of the attorneys, I don't have time. Sorry. These are people I had no idea who they were. And I started reaching out to family and friends, sending out Facebook posts, doing anything I could to really connect with somebody in the legal field. I didn't care what they were in, family, criminal, whatever it was. I wanted to talk to them and hear about their story. Hear what brought them there, why they chose that field. If I hadn't done that, I probably would still be in the mindset that I'm going to go to law school to do contracts. I would have gotten out. I would have probably quit pretty quickly, and then I would have had probably some debt to go along with that JD that I was not using. And so my advice is go find a law office, go get work experience, work as a paralegal. The amount of information I've gained in the past 2 years of working in this office, or year and a half, is incredible. Talking to almost every single attorney in the office, asking them about law school, about the LSAT, about what they liked about their school, what they didn't like about their school. These are things that you're not going to find on Reddit. These are not things you're going to find, by just emailing somebody. So yeah, go get some work experience. Go learn what it means to work, 9 to 5 or an 8 to 5, or if you're going to go into private practice, go learn what it means to work a 7 to 7, because university does not prepare you for that. I remember leaving undergrad and feeling like, oh yeah, okay, I kind of make my own schedule. I get up when I want to. I go to class for a few hours. I come home, eat a snack. Like, it's just not the real world. And
Doesn't
so,
work like that.
no, not at all. So, two more pieces of advice here. And I've had the pleasure of working with some really incredible attorneys in my office, one of whom is in her early 70s. And she is a public defender. She's an incredible, incredible human being who gives back to this community more than I could ever imagine an individual giving back. And your legal career is going to be long. For those who are, 22 right now, leaving college, thinking, oh my God, I got to get my LSAT done. I got to put in my applications. What am I going to do? Go enjoy life. Go. Do something you're never going to be able to do again. Go travel the world. Go find a job at a nightclub. Go do something else that's not legal work, because you will be in a legal office until you retire or until you're 70. Your legal career can be so long. And she's really proven that to me. She is somebody that will probably have to be dragged away from the office because she loves what she does. And so, and then my last piece of advice is just don't give up. There are going to be days that are hard. There are going to be days where you think there is no end in sight, that, maybe you're scoring in the 160s, high 160s, take a practice test and you score 155. There's going to be days like that. My partner always says progress is not linear, and it would drive me nuts during the LSAT because it is true, but it's, you kind of want to shake him and be like, no, I don't care. I just want the higher score. I want the trajectory to keep going up. But the truth is you're going to score, a 168, then you're going to score a 155, then you're going to score a 179, then you're going to score, it's going to bounce. Those might be a little bit dramatic, but it's not going to be a continual upward trajectory. So embrace those moments, dig in, and yeah, don't give up.
Jeez, you've got me ready to go. Like, I'm ready to take the LSAT again. Come on. Let's go climb a mountain or something. Brayden's got me pumped.
It's all the David Goggins I listened to this morning.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
No,
that'll
I'm
get
just joking. No, I'm joking.
you. I'm sure you wouldn't be the first. All right.
Probably not.
Yeah. Brayden, it's been a real pleasure, and LSAT Demon is lucky to have you on the team. Well done again on just your persistence on all that hard work. So, yeah, well done, and stay in touch.
Thank you. Absolutely. I appreciate you, and I appreciate everything the demon does.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.